This week's parasha is Parashat Matot. In this week's parasha, we learn the laws of vows. A person can make a neder or a shivua. We will discuss that. We're given this leniency that a husband or a father can annul the wife or daughter's spouse. And then we have the war with Midian, an extraordinary war. Only 12,000 men go out against Midian, and they come back with the loot, and that's a bit of a problem. And Moshe gets upset at them. What you're doing, bringing back these women? And then we have the laws of how we purify vessels from food, and how we toivel, how we immerse vessels when we purchase them from a non-Jew. Not now. We're doing the quick overview. When we do it in depth, we'll deal with questions. And at the end of the parasha, we have the cattle of Reuven and Gad, and Reuven and Gad request to have the portion on the eastern side of the Jordan. And Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us how to make a condition. He tells them a condition: if you guys go into Israel and conquer the land of Israel and lead the way in, then you will get the land on the eastern side of the Jordan. But if you don't, then you won't. So that's the parasha where they agree to this deal. That's our parasha in a nutshell. Now, is it this week? Yeah. Let's check. Okay, we'll find out. There's an easy way to know if this week is Maaseh or not. We always read Devarim, the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. Being that Monday is Rosh Chodesh Av, that means Tisha B'Av is going to be the following week, Wednesday. That means the next Shabbat has to be Devarim, which means this week is Matot and Maaseh. You are correct. We will finish the book of Bamidbar this week. You are right. Yeah, but now you know how to calculate it without looking right over there. You might be Shifti Bevet Hashem Kol Yimei Chayai. You might know, so why don't you understand? Understand the system. The Shabbat before Dvarim, the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av is always Dvarim. Being that Tisha B'Av is going to be 2 weeks, is going to be 14 days, 16 days from today. That means we have this Shabbat and the following Shabbat and then Tisha B'Av, which means next Shabbat has to be Devarim. So this Shabbat is Matot and Maaseh. And we have in Maaseh, thank you, a record of the journeys of Israel. And then we have a recording of some of the wars of Israel.
What does Matot mean?
Staffs, tribes, like Shevet, Mate. Am Yisrael is warned to conquer the land of Israel and not leave anyone behind, not leave any idols around. And Hashem warns them, and this is going to be the lead into the book of Devarim, that anything they leave behind will ultimately come back to haunt them. They will be thorns in their sides. They will be like posts in their eyes, and they will fight them to the end over the land of Israel, who deserves to be here. And then Hashem tells Moshe, tell the Jewish people the boundaries of the land of Israel. And in Parashat Maaseh, we have a description of what is Israel, the boundaries, what's considered the holy land of Israel. We're up to Shishi. Hashem tells Moshe the leaders of each tribe which will be involved in dividing the land of Israel, and then the Levite cities, the cities where a person can go for refuge, the cities of refuge. And we have the laws of a person who kills by mistake that he must run to a city of refuge. We have the laws of a relative who's allowed to take down someone who killed his relative even if it was by a mistake.
We don't do this anymore.
Maybe. And at the end of the book of Maaseh, at the end of the book of Bamidbar, we have the story of the daughters of Tzlafchad, where their relatives come in and say, if they marry out of the tribe, then these lands will move out of the tribe to their husbands and then their sons. So Hashem says, okay, this generation will be careful to marry within their tribes. And the end of the book of Bamidbar is how they married within their tribes. So that's the conclusion of Parashat Maaseh. Thank you very much. Now let's go into our parasha. Okay, what's a vow? Gentlemen, where do we encounter neder? Did any of you encounter neder this week?
Avram makes...
This week. Where did we encounter neder? Did we encounter neder in anything we did this week? What about last week? So last week you did, because you fasted Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Why are you obligated to fast Shiva Asar B'Tammuz? So the idea that we accept the fast day upon ourselves is, I've taken it like a vow. But wait, you didn't say anything to accept Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. It's a given. It's the rabbinic institution. Everyone knows you meant to accept Shiva Asar B'Tammuz on yourself. So that's the idea that I can take upon myself something. It doesn't say it in Torah. How do I take it upon myself? That's the concept of a vow. So what is a vow? We have two types of vows. We have what's called a Shivua. So Shivua, we have different types of Shavuot. We'll take the most classical one. What's called Shavuot Bitui, a Shavuot of expression. So Shavuot Bitui is, I swear by Hashem's name that it's nighttime. I swear that it's daytime. I swear that tomorrow I will go to the marketplace. If a person says he swears by Hashem's name that tomorrow he will do something, he won't do something, he'll eat ice cream, he won't eat ice cream. Or a person swears by Hashem's name that he did do something. He says, he swears by Hashem's name that yesterday he ate ice cream. That yesterday he did not eat ice cream. That's Shavuot Bitui. That's classical Shavuot. What if he makes a pointless Shavuot? He says, I swear by Hashem's name that it's nighttime now. Everyone knows it's nighttime. That's called Shavuot Shav. That's a pointless Shavuot. That's prohibited. You're not supposed to use Hashem's name in vain. That's one of the Ten Commandments. Lo tisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha l'shav. So we just discussed two types of Shavuot. So Shavuot could be a person says, I swear by Hashem's name, I will go to sleep. I swear by Hashem's name, I won't sleep for 2 days. Those are types of Shavuot. What is a neder? A neder is that a person says, this animal is a sacrifice. Then a person says, would you like this cup of coffee? He says, no. I say, Jeremiah, please have a drink. And Jeremiah says, no, the last guy who drank from that was like, I don't want that. And I say, Jeremiah, do me a favor, drink the coffee. And Jeremiah says, that cup of coffee should be prohibited to me like a chatas offering. Boom, he just took a vow. He made a neder. He said, this cup should be prohibited on him like a sacrifice. That's a neder. A neder is that we can make something prohibited on us like a sacrifice. So we have the neder that's in the Beit HaMikdash. Every time you brought a sacrifice, you would have to first give it holiness. How do you make the animal holy? Bessie over here is not so holy. So you make a neder. In order to make Bessie holy, we say, this cow, this sheep is a korban. By saying that, we've designated it. So before we sacrifice it, we verbally make it holy. That's one type of neder. Comes the Torah and says, in your daily life, you can make a cup of coffee, also neder. Neder is, this should be prohibited on me like a sacrifice.
Nazir?
Neder.
But a Nazir says, I won't drink wine.
Nazir is another concept. We did that a few weeks ago in Nasa. Now we're in Neder. So we have Neder or Shavua. Torah says, keep your word. Keep your word, because it destroys the world if you don't keep your word. What's a person saying when he's taking a vow? He's saying, by God's honor, I'm telling you the truth. Right? So when Daniel wants to lie, so he says, on the king's honor, right? But when he's telling the truth, he swears by Hashem. By Hashem's honor, I'm telling the truth.
So
Torah, what? Very nice.
So
yeah.
He made us swear and told him to put his hand on Bayarech.
Yes.
Touching his bread or something.
Yes. Avram, Eliezer.
Isn't that a neder?
So that's a shvua. Hishava Ali. That's a shvua. It's not a neder. We have an interesting halacha that if a person takes a neder, Torah says he did a bad thing. If a person takes a vow, even if he keeps his vow, he did a bad thing. Why? Because very often he won't keep it. But you'll say, I will keep it. So keep it. Don't make the vow. Meaning, even if a person keeps his vow, it's a bad idea to take a vow. Torah gives us this capacity, and we use this capacity. When we accept Shabbos early, we're using that capacity. We're making this time holy. How can I make time holy? Through the power of the vow. That's what gives us the power to use our speech to make time holy. Okay, now the Torah says, your wife takes a vow. So you annoyed your wife. You were a very good husband, but you annoyed her. Believe it or not, this can happen. And your wife says, She says, Yosef Chaim. Shower and bath water should be prohibited on me for the next week like a sacrifice. So Yosef Chaim suggested to his wife that maybe showering once every 3 days in the sweltering heat was not such a good idea. And she decided she's going to fire back. She's pretty annoyed. You saying I stink? You saying I don't shower enough? I take a vow. For the next week, no showers. Here, now, that's my vow. Goodbye. And she walks into a room and slams the door. Says the Torah, Mr. Yosef Chaim, you have the power. And that day, till nightfall, you can say, Mufar lach, I annul the vow. In that day, till the nighttime, you can annul her vow. So that's a power a husband has. What happens if she makes the vow and you don't hear about it till 3 days later? 3 days pass and you ask her, honey, do you want me to watch the kids while you shower? And she goes, I got the hint, but you know what? I took a vow 3 days ago. For the next 30 days, no showering. And now you have to honor it because I'm being holy. Okay, I took this vow. So Yosef Chaim hears this. He goes to the back room. He calls his rabbi. He says, Rabbi, what am I supposed to do? You hear what my wife just said? So the rabbi says, that's okay. You could say, Mufar, I annul the vow now. But what happens if he does that? Yosef Chaim goes into the back room. He calls the rabbi. He hears that. He says, okay, it's annulled. It's annulled. Rabbon Shom, I annul her vow. So the Torah gave a woman an out. Because the Torah knew that women might be more excitable and they might say things that they regret, so the Torah said, I'm giving you an out. A husband doesn't have this out. His wife can't do that service for him. But a husband can do it, provided that he says it the same day he heard it. Now what happens if Yosef Chaim is sitting in the back room and he's going, great, I did that, I annulled her vow. And he walks back out and he decides he's not going to tell her. Let her stew a little bit. So after the fifth day, she has these, she's blistering a little bit from not showering. And she says, Yosef Chaim, honey, you know, I took that vow about 30 days. Remember that? Well, could we discuss it? So he goes, yeah, I'm going to go down Mincha Maariv. I'll be right back. In 25 minutes, we'll talk about it. Okay? He decides he's going to let her stew a little bit more. He runs out to Mincha Maariv. He comes back from Mincha Maariv. He hears the shower water running. So he knocks on the door. He says, honey, is that you? So she goes, what don't I do for you, Yosef Chaim? I know I took a vow, but I couldn't do this to you. I wanted to be clean so that when you come home, I'd be clean. So now Yosef Chaim's in a bind. Wait a second. Technically, halachically, he annulled her vow 2 days ago. But she didn't know that when she walked into the shower. Says the Torah, she needs forgiveness. Because she intended to do something prohibited. Even though technically we know it wasn't. But she didn't know that at the time she walked into the shower. When she walked into the shower, she thought she was bound by the vow. She doesn't know her husband annulled it. From here we learn a concept. The Mishnah says, if a person walks into a restaurant and orders pork, and they serve him lamb, and they serve him kosher lamb, and he sits there thinking he's eating pork, and he finishes it, and he says, that was so delicious. And then he says, that was so wrong, I feel terrible. And he sits there, and he starts crying, and he says, I have to do tshuva, and he takes out a Maseil Shisharim from his pocket. He says, how do I do tshuva now? And he sits there at the place, and he's thinking, do I even bench over eating not kosher? What am I supposed to do? And he's saying the thing, he takes out and he starts learning. He says, I got to go back to Machon Meir. It's been so long. And he's heartbroken. He's sitting there saying, how far have I come? And the waiter comes over and puts his hand on his shoulder. And he says, chum, what's bothering you? And he goes, I can't tell you. He says, no, tell me. He says, well, I'm Jewish. I wasn't supposed to eat pork. So the guy goes, I know. So he says, okay, so you know, so I'm embarrassed. Then he goes, no, I tricked you. I ran out to the kosher restaurant and I brought you kosher food. I figured you didn't really want pork. I served you kosher food. So he closes his Maseil Shisharim and puts it back in the pocket and says, I'm so holy. You see that? Even when I meant to eat pork, I ate kosher. says the Torah, doesn't work that way. You better do tshuva. Torah says if you meant to do something wrong, but it worked out right, that counts as an aveira. Well, you can't say, right, we learned that concept from here. Because when the wife walked into the shower, her intention was, I know I took a vow, but I'm doing it anyways. Now let me bring this down to our day and age. That means if you drank and drove and you say, I got home safely, that doesn't mean anything. When a person drank and then got behind the wheel, what he was saying is, the commandment to be careful not to endanger my life and other people's life, that can go out the window for now. I want to drive home. And even if he makes it home safely, he can't say, I'm a tzaddik, everything worked out just right. Doesn't work that way. If he did something that was an aveira, then the fact that it worked out in a good way doesn't mean it wasn't an aveira. The guy who sat down to eat pork, even though it worked out it wasn't pork, well, you know what? That's what the Torah just taught us. That's called an aveira. She needs forgiveness. And no, we do not bench over pork. It says, Botzea berech ni'etz Hashem. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, he who steals and then makes a blessing over what he's stolen, that's called blasphemy. You're not blessing God over stolen goods. So we say, the concept is that to do a transgression and then make a blessing over it is considered not a blessing. Don't bless God over something you're not allowed to do.
Wait, so Rabbi Kal Vachomer, if she makes a neder at night?
No, then he has till the next night.
But you said like a few days could go by if he doesn't hear it.
If he doesn't know about it. The so day he knows about it, he has till that night.
But he let
it did help her, but she didn't know about it.
Because
he only heard about it 2 days later.
But
the day you hear about
day,
it.
No?
No, she didn't.
She said, ha, I'm not taking a shower.
That was the first story. The second story was, on the third day he asked her, maybe you want a shower, and she says, 2 days ago I took the vow.
You can
that was
wait
the second story.
Once you annul it, with, and you don't tell her?
It's like, a bad idea, that's what Torah says.
But don't you have to tell her before nighttime?
No, you have to annul it before nighttime. She doesn't have to know about it.
That story is actually in the Chumash.
It's not in the Chumash, but from the Chumash the Gemara derives that a husband can annul a neder that's called Beino Levina, something that affects between him and her. If she takes a vow that has nothing to do with him, she takes a vow, from now on, I swear that I will only get on the train on the second door and not the third or the first door. Does it affect him? His power to annul vows is only vows that affect him.
What does it affect?
Not vows that have nothing to do with him.
That's very thin line. You don't know when.
Right? So sometimes you have to ask, right?
Even if it affects her well-being?
It's not... Okay.
Let's just say...
And he'll say everything affects him. Her whole life affects him. She might miss a train because she won't get to that door, right? He can't say that. It's considered beino levina. Is it something between us?
Say we're partners, so we're one.
So no. So that's what the halacha is saying. It has to be something that affects him directly. Yes, Jacob.
If a girl's not married, can a father know the father she makes
one? No, not when she's matures. The Torah gives the father rights only in a very short period of time. In the time between she's a minor to an adult. But once she becomes an adult, you know, once she's 13, it's over.
12?
No one can annul it. We won't go into it.
Well, that's why she gets married young.
It is a good
proof,
right?
Okay. So if he's quiet after the day, if he comes back and says, I know it, too late, doesn't work. You can't do it after that day. And if he tells her, she says, I'm not showering for a month, Yosef Chaim, he goes, good. That's it, you can't annul it anymore. Once you said good, you can't come back a minute later and say, never mind, I take it back. No, please.
What if you were angry, enraged, not yourself?
Tavlak, go to your rabbi. Now you need to figure out with the rabbi what you do with that vow.
What do you do?
That's a good question.
You're my rabbi.
So...
No. So once you upheld it, you can't undo it.
That's it.
You got to go figure out
but
with the rabbi what you do now.
If she's angry, isn't it under like circumstances when you're angry, it doesn't count?
Usually not. Usually watch your tongue when you're angry.
Even if you're
angry.
You just have to say, I don't do this, and that's it.
No. So we said a neder has specific language, and a shvua has specific language. You have to say, I swear by God that.
That's a shua, but by neder?
Neder is, this will be prohibited upon me like a sacrifice.
You have to say like a sacrifice.
Or a term that obviously means that. That's why most people don't know how to make a neder. The only real question we have is, did people make a shavua?
So it shouldn't happen when you're angry that you...
You shouldn't? No, watch your mouth. No. Shomer pivul shono. Shomer pivul shono. What's the end of the pasuk? Shomer mitzarot nafsho. He who watches his mouth and his tongue watches himself from great harm.
Well, if you're angry, you've made a mistake.
So don't make mistakes that involve God. Like the Talmud says, a guy says, but I made a mistake. So the Talmud says, but we hit you with a hammer. Imagine they're standing over you with a hammer. You wouldn't make that mistake. There's a certain respect we have to have of Hashem. We shouldn't make mistakes in this area. Right, it's not very nice to speak to the creator of the world and invoke his honor just because we lost our temper. It is not very nice, I agree. Hashem says, what? Let's move on, guys, we're at Cheney. Let's move on. We have a lot to cover. Hashem says, take Israel's revenge from the Midianites. The Medrash Tanhuma has two opinions. It's interesting to note archaeologically. One opinion says this is the Midian that Moshe grew up in. And that's why Moshe sends Pinchas to battle. Because we have a concept in Talmud, Baradishatit minei pit that you drank from, Lotishti beikala. Don't throw a clod of earth into it. You drank from it. Don't go throwing earth. But what does the well know? No. You benefited from the well? Respect that well. Don't say, what does the well know? Moshe Rabbeinu benefited from Midian. When he was a fugitive, he ran to Midian. So Moshe was not going to lead the war against Midian, even though they deserved it. Let someone else do it. Sometimes we think, if the halacha says we should do it, so of course I'm going to do it. And the answer is no. Sometimes the halacha said you should do it, but you shouldn't be the one to do it. Let someone else do it. So Moshe doesn't lead the war against Midian because he grew up there. That's one opinion in the Medrash. The other opinion in the Medrash says the Midian Moshe ran to was destroyed. Didn't exist anymore. This was a new nation called Midian. And that answers a lot of questions, because geographically we find in the book of Judges that there was a Midian that was far east. And this Midian seems to be west, close to Israel. And the Midian Moshe ran to seems far-fetched. It was northeast. It sounds like it was south, the Midian Moshe ran to. So the Medrash already tells us that there were at least two nations called Midian. Now if Israel wipes out Midian, how does Midian reappear in the book of Judges? So that sounds like Midian might have broken up into colonies of Midian. There was a Midian that Moshe ran to, which didn't exist anymore, the Medrash says. There was a Midian we were bothered by, which won't exist when we're done with this week's Parsha. And there was another Midian that shows up in a few decades in the period of Judges. So it could be the man named Midian, he progenitized, he had children who became tribes that all held on to the name Midian, and that's why we find Midian in different places. This is my theory. Meaning the Medrash Tanhuma simply states that one opinion says this was the same Midian, that's why Moshe doesn't lead the military campaign, and the other opinion says no, this was not the same Midian, and the reason Pinchas leads this war is because he began dealing with Midian, so he's going to finish the deal. He's going to wipe them out. Yes, Gabriel. Hi, Gabriel. Yes. Good. Okay. Very nice. I didn't think of that. That supports the idea. Very good.
They won't call.
Very good. Very interesting. Because the Midian we encounter in the book of Shoftim and Judges is a nomadic tribe. The Navi describes them as a nomadic tribe in the days of Gidon. It says they showed up with all their camels and tents and they destroyed everything they could find in Israel. And they'd swoop into Israel periodically. So it sounds like they're a nomadic tribe of the desert. Doesn't sound like there are people like over here, right? So that also supports that idea. Yeah, very nice. I didn't think of that. Very nice. Thank you. You guys should know, I quote you for years to come. Vinny said a comment last year, and I quoted it in Shul, with his name. And this week, Amit Shem, I'm going to quote you with your name in Shul. And someone, you said last year, can it be that Pinchas gained his kahuna out of being a zealot? just like Levi gained his kahuna out of being a zealot, is there a connection? So someone remembered that this year and came over to me with a source that supports that idea this year. I didn't get a chance to tell you. Yeah, 2 days ago on Shabbos, someone said to me, you quoted a Machon Meir guy who made this comment a year ago, and I found the Medrash that supports it. He pointed out last year that it could be that just like Levi became the Kohanim, the tribe of Levi, because by the Egel, by the golden calf, they were zealous for Hashem's name, even at the expense of their family members. So too Pinchas was zealous, even at the expense of family members, at the expense of Israel, for Hashem's name, and he got the kahuna. So he asked if there was a connection.
Then no one in Levi committed the crime.
Thursday night. Agreed. I agree with you. Yes. We move on. You're right. So
they did kill 7 families when they ran away.
Okay. So we have this war against Midian. Hashem tells Moshe, gather an army, 1,000 volunteers from each tribe. The problem was that Moshe cannot send to war the men who had transgressed with the women of Midian. And that's why, even though Midian was this huge nation which had tremendous numbers, and we should have sent an army that was much more than 12,000 men, Moshe said, I don't have more than 12,000 men. Right. So according to this medrash, it sounds like there were gradations in transgression. The pasuk in the Song of Songs says, "Shinayich ke'eder harechelim." Your teeth are beautifully white, like the flocks of sheep that are coming out of the river as they've just been washed. So the medrash says, "Who? What does that mean? Your teeth?" Teeth is what bites, what consumes. That's these soldiers, these 12,000 men. That they are so beautiful. Shakulain bahim. There isn't even a nick in your teeth. They're so beautiful, your teeth. That's these 12,000 men. There wasn't even a nick. There was nothing imperfect about them. They come back from war and they tell Moshe, we want to bring a sacrifice to atone for our transgressions. So Moshe says, did any of you sin with the women? So they say, no, lo nifkad mimenu ish. We stuck together in pairs. When the women, when they'd go to war in ancient times, the women would get all dressed up like women of ill repute and try to seduce the men. And they figured if we lost the war, at least we could marry into the ranks of the enemy instead of being taken as a maid or a slave. We'll seduce them and we'll end up being their wives. So they'd go out. When they see they were losing the war, they'd come out to seduce the men. So the men of Israel were careful. They recognized these girls. It says they looked at the women and they were able to say, that's Isabella that Shmerel cheated on his wife with. That's Francine that Chuck, he cheated on his wife with. They looked at the women. It says they recognized them, the Medrash says. They saw the women and they knew which men had been with these women. So they didn't trust themselves. They went in pairs. They said, in order to make sure we don't fall, they're going to try to be seductive. We can't trust ourselves. Let's go in pairs. We'll make sure we don't fall. So they, when they entered enemy territory, they always stuck to one another. Here we see the greatness. This is a recurring concept in Judaism. We don't say, you're a tzaddik, you're a saint, you can go in there, don't worry, nothing will happen. We say, you're a tzaddik, you're a saint, so be careful, because anything can happen. Every person can fall, so make sure you don't. Make sure you take on protections. That means if you have a lab partner in university, don't say, I could stay up and work with her and it's fine because she's Chinese and I'm Jewish and nothing's going to happen between us. Doesn't work that way. Stay in a public place. Make sure nothing can happen.
Rabbi, what are the
questions? No, guys have their hands up. It's not fair. Yes, Jacob.
Is this the parasha where the question that speaks about if you want to marry one, you have to shave her head up?
We're not up to that. That'll be in Kitetze. Over here, these women, being that they purposely came to cause the men to transgress, meaning that's what Moshe tells them. Remember, you're going against an enemy. It's a different deal if two people are in the heat of the moment. It's transgression. It's prohibited. But we don't look at the girl and say, why'd you seduce a nice Jewish man? We say it's wrong, it's prohibited, you ruined his life, but we don't say, you know, hate her. She, you might say, it's pretty bad, she ruined his life. It says that when a Jew goes with a non-Jewish girl, so even when he gets to Shemaim, Avraham Avinu looks at him and says, do I know you? Meaning when a Jew comes to Shemaim, it says Avram recognizes his children. But if a man was with a non-Jewish woman, so then it says Avram Avinu has a hard time recognizing him. He stands at the entrance to perdition and he says, anyone that's my kids is not going in there. But if he was with a non-Jewish woman, then Avram Avinu has a hard time recognizing him. He better do serious tshuva for that. So she's definitely done him a great harm. But it's not the same what happened here. Here there was no heat of the moment. There was nothing. They left their homes. They left their palaces. They came to the Israeli camp with one goal. Let's seduce them to sin. Because when Bilaam blessed them, Bilaam kept telling Balak, and he was hinting. Even as he was blessing the Jews, he meant to hint. He kept saying, there's nothing wrong with the Jews. That's why I can't curse them. They are so perfect. And he kept hinting, Balak, get the hint. They haven't transgressed. That's why I can't curse them. Why is Bilaam present when we have this war? Because they summoned him again. They sent him word, and they said, we caused them to transgress. Now you could curse them. Come back. Meaning they got the hint. Even as he was blessing them, he kept hinting to them, this is how you make them fall. The reason I can't curse is lo hibit avin beYaakov. Hashem saw nothing wrong with them. Make sure there's something wrong, then we'll have what to talk about. Just a second. Gabriel, yes.
When the men were seduced by the woman.
You gotta speak louder.
Okay, the men were seduced by the Midianites, were they tzaddikim?
The men of war or the men back in the days of Moshe? It seems they were tzaddikim, because Bilaam says there's nothing wrong with the Jewish people. It seems like before they were seduced, they were tzaddikim. Right, right. That's why they were smart. That's why they stayed in pairs. And the second thing they did is, when they came back to the camp, I was in the middle of explaining this, I'll get back to you in a second. When they came back to the camp, they said, we want to bring a sacrifice. So Moshe said, did any of you do something wrong? So they said, nope, we stuck in pairs, none of us fell. There's nothing wrong with any of us. So he said, then what are you bringing the sacrifice for? So they said, because zanu einehem minayirva. They said, we fed our eyes from prohibited sites.
Oh, come on.
Oh no, not come on. What the Torah is teaching us here is that just like we're hungry, what I'm telling you now is Rashi on the Gemara, just like we're hungry for food, there's a hunger in our eyes to see what we shouldn't be seeing in women. And so when they went in and the women were trying to seduce them, they said none of us did something prohibited, but we looked the way we shouldn't have been looking, and that was prohibited, and that we want to bring a sacrifice for. Zanu einehem minayva. They said we fed our eyes from prohibited sites. That means I was flipping through the channels, a guy can say, and it wasn't my fault. What came up there was a very bad scene, but did you stay and feed your eyes? Maybe you shouldn't have been flipping through the channels. Maybe that you shouldn't have a TV at home. But a guy can say, I was walking down the street and I didn't know this was what was coming up. So then the next question is, did you feed your eyes? Or did you avert your eyes? And the habit we try to get ourselves into is averting our eyes. And they brought sacrifices over that. They said that was wrong of us. He's waiting, sorry. Yes, sir.
Since everyone
that was a look of I love you.
Since everyone gets to go to war and the Kohanim don't, what on earth are we supposed to be doing while they're
like out
there dying?
Who said the Kohanim don't? Who said the Kohanim don't go to war?
You're not allowed to go kill.
Who said that?
But Kohanim aren't supposed to become Tumani.
Who killed Yoav ben Tzeruya?
If it's for a mitzvah.
No. Our wars are almost always
not
a mitzvah.
All of them are for mitzvahs.
Thursday night. Yes. So Kohanim.
That's the only thing I
can. Well, if your king wants to go conquer some land, I can't, you know, we can't go.
Thursday night. So Hashem tells Moshe, fight with Midian and then die. There's a medrash here which I don't know the pshat in. You guys can think about it. Maybe you'll enlighten me. The medrash says Moshe desperately wanted to see revenge from Midian. It says Moshe didn't want to die without seeing the blood of the 24,000 avenged. Why this was important to Moshe, I don't know. It says this was a gift to Moshe that before he died, this battle happened. Now, Ramban says it could be that Moshe's intention in sending the soldiers was to just attack them, not to conquer them. just to do some harm. It's a way of saying, guys, you shouldn't mess with us. Now, Halacha says that if our neighbor comes into town and they start stealing wood, firewood from our forest, go to war. Because if you don't react to that theft, then the next thing you know, they'll attack you. Meaning, we have that in our yeshuvim all the time, where they first test us. The first thing they do is they'll come to the gate and they'll just touch the gate and they wait to see if we react. The next thing they'll do is they'll start throwing rocks. The next thing they'll do is they'll throw Molotov cocktails. The next thing they'll do is they'll take someone who's mentally impaired and they'll toss them over the fence to walk in our territory and see how we react. They keep testing us. And if they see that we don't react, then they try to break through the fence first with kids and then with terrorists. It's a procession. We know how they do it. One of the things they did when we put up security cameras is they came and they purposely, next to the cameras, put up Hamas flags. They're testing us. They want to see how fast we react, how much they can get away with. So periodically they'll come and just break a lock and walk away and watch how fast we can react. They're waiting to see. So the Halacha says on Shabbos, you see that they came and stole firewood, go to war. Because if you don't go to war over firewood, you'll go to war with them inside your backyard. You have to show them that they cannot enter your territory. So Ramban says, when Moshe sent them to war against Midian, the idea was, teach the nations a lesson. They can't just attack us. They're not going to get away with this. Moshe was surprised. They conquered all of Midian. That wasn't the plan. They come back and they say, here, we've conquered everyone. Finished. No more Midianite army. That wasn't the plan.
As a nation or if somebody's private also?
No, as a nation. Private is a different story.
If not, an Andrew comes to steal.
You can't infer from how a nation reacts, how an individual reacts.
How are you supposed to look away if you're at war and there are beautiful women?
You finished the war. They're coming out to seduce you.
You just said that they sinned by looking.
Right. So at that point, they could have said, everyone to that corner, all of you stand there, and then rounded them up in a way that they would have seen less.
How long was the war? How many days?
I don't know. So Moshe goes out to the people of war. We see Moshe's humility. There are 12,000 men who are defiled by this war, even though technically they're allowed to come into the camp, but if 12,000 defiled people come in, then you're going to lose your purity in the camp. So they just left them outside to purify themselves, and Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to greet them. Moshe gets upset at them, and he says, what'd you bring the women back for? These are the women that caused the 24,000 to die.
Well, they brought when
you,
them back?
Yeah, what'd you bring them back alive for? These are our enemy. The men didn't come here to fight us. It was the women who came to cause the downfall of the Jewish people. Okay, good question. So Moshe gets upset. And so even though he's right and getting upset, right away the Torah tells us they needed to know the halachas of purifying and kashering the vessels. And Moshe didn't teach it. Elazar taught it. So Chazal say, yeah, Moshe got upset. He forgot the halacha. That's the rule. If a person is a prophet and he gets upset, he loses his prophecy. If he's a wise man and he gets upset, he loses his wisdom. If he's a regular person and he gets upset, so he loses his intellect. We lose when we get upset. We have to realize that when we get upset, we're at a state of loss. Our emotions are in charge. Chazal say, if a person out of anger breaks a vessel, it's like he worshipped an idol. What he's saying is, God isn't the boss, I'm not the boss, my emotions are the boss. Our emotions are not the boss. We work with our emotions channeled through our mind, but our emotions are not the boss. This is one of the great challenges of our generation. We are the feel-good generation. I want to be religious when I'm inspired. I want to keep Torah when I'm inspired. I want to do mitzvos when I'm inspired. What will happen when I'm not inspired? Leave me alone. I don't want to get out of bed. I'm not inspired today. It doesn't work that way. Things of true meaning are things that come with commitment. Commitment comes when I'm not inspired. That means you don't wake up one morning and tell your wife, you know, I'm not so excited over you. It's been 3 months I'm not so excited. It's been 3 years I'm not so excited over you. Let's end this. Doesn't work that way. Marriage is about commitment. Things with true meaning are about commitment. That means even if we have a phase and a period and it can last years, or I'm not inspired, I'm not excited, doesn't matter. That's what real commitment is about. I'm doing it, I'm committed. And that's how I build things of true value. So when we get upset, what we're really saying is, oh, my emotions are in charge. Shouldn't say that. Emotions are important, but they have to be channeled with the mind. Moshe got upset. It says he couldn't teach the next halachos. So Elazar comes out and teaches them. And he teaches them two halachot. Number one is, whatever you use in a fire, you can kasher through fire, which means you guys go out to a camping range, you guys go out to a public park, you want to use their barbecue. The grate was used with pork. How can you use it? So the halacha says that if you can take burning coals and put it all over the grate, which sometimes you can't do because the grate is too thick and the grate is attached. But if you can put it, if the grate is detached, if you buy a grate, if you buy a barbecue, which you can detach the grate, so when you put the coal on the grate, you move the coal, obviously, with tongs, right? You move the coal, you leave it on one part of the grate, and then after a few seconds that becomes red hot, you move it again. If you have a lot of coals, you could do this more quickly. And then when you've ensured that every part of the grate got hot, you also do the barbecue itself, the body of the barbecue, because things splatter on that too. Now that I've put my coal all over the barbecue and the grate, for the next week that I'm on vacation over here, that barbecue is kosher, even if it was used only an hour ago. Because what I'm doing is I'm burning out the flavor. So if I have a blowtorch, in Chazal's time, their metals were made differently, so that when you put a metal into the fire, it gave off sparks. Sorry, that's called libun. You make it so that white sparks come flying out. Our metals never give off white sparks. So you have to bring it to heat, like burning coals placed on it. Or you put a blowtorch to it. And then it's kosher, even if it was used with non-kosher items.
Something red hot, when it turns red, that's when...
Some things won't turn red. I'm saying your grate might not be made to turn red. But if you take a burning coal, a red hot coal, and you put it on it, and you put it on both sides, on all sides, then that's okay. Again, our problem is that barbecues can be this thick, the grate, when you go to public parks. And then when you put it on the top, it won't get the bottom hot. So that's if it's a thin grate, then it's enough that you put it across it. But we always say, put it on one side, turn it over, put it on the other side, you kosher the grate. If you have a blowtorch, that's good.
In America, they have these like tin stuff that you put on the grates.
I don't know anything about it. Sorry. Yes? Oh, so then that's the next halacha we'll get to. So the first halacha is, if we have an item that's used with hot food, so we say, if it was used by fire, like a grate, like a barbecue, like a spoke, so then you need to put it in fire or in coals to burn out the flavor. If it's a pot that you cook in, so it's not direct heat from a fire, it's not being baked, it's not being roasted, it's being cooked. So then you have the fire heating the water, and then the liquid takes the flavor and puts it in the walls of the vessel. So then you take that vessel and you put it in a bigger vessel and you cook it. Then we wait 24 hours before we cook the vessel. That's the idea of taking the non-kosher flavor out of the vessel. And scientifically, I've seen that it works. I never thought this works. I mean, I always thought it was something that I don't understand. And then when I prepared for Pesach to kosher my vessels, I took a pot, I cleaned it really well. I cleaned it a second time really well. And then I put in water when it was fully clean, and I brought the water to a boil. And suddenly I saw pieces of fat in the water, and I couldn't believe what my eyes were seeing. So I decided it must be a facade. I'm imagining it. I didn't clean it well. So I took the next pot. I cleaned it really well. I cleaned it a second time. I came to my wife and I said, do me a favor, check. Is there any residue here? Is there anything? Please check, because I want to experiment now. So my wife checks and she says, no, it's perfectly clean. I fill it up with water. I boil it again and I see a layer of fat floating there.
But it's the known thing that the metal absorbs fats.
That's what the Talmud says. I didn't know that it's scientific. The Rashba says it's scientific, but
metal
I never saw it.
Dense in it. It's like...
Okay, so that's this halacha. The second halacha is that when you purchase a vessel that's used directly with food, if it's made of metal, if it's made of all the different types of metal, then you put it in a mikveh. The rabbis extended it to glass as well. We make a blessing, al tvilas kelim, and before we start using that vessel, once we've purchased a vessel from a non-Jew, we put it in the mikveh, we make a blessing, and after that, we use that vessel. That includes vessels specifically that come in contact with food. Meaning, if you have a vessel that you don't use with food, a corkscrew opener, Your pocket knife, which you basically use for camping and other stuff, but sometimes you'll use it to open up corks and stuff like that, or so that doesn't need to go in mikveh. It's the things that come in contact with food, and we will pick up here, Bezat Hashem, Thursday night.